We talk a lot on this podcast about chess improvement, but when it comes to improving your hiring processes, Indeed is the platform you need. Indeed has over 350 million global monthly visitors, and it has a matching engine that helps you find quality work candidates fast. You can use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with your candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree that Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Years ago, when I was running a chess teaching business, I found it hard to find good help, and I had to go through a lot of back and forth to even screen potential candidates. Indeed allows you to do those things efficiently in one place. Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed for hiring, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of Perpetual Chess will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility if you go to Indeed.com/chess. Just go to Indeed.com/chess right now, and you'll be supporting our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast, Indeed.com/chess. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. What's something that works so well that it's basically magic? This time of year, I think of air conditioning. But selling with Shopify is also seamless. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling chess courses, merch, software services, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person point-of-sale system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify's magic, which is your AI-powered all-star. When I was running an online teaching business, enabling seamless online payment saved me many hours of work and helped me focus on what I enjoy. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries use it, because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. So if you sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/chess, that's all lowercase, shopify.com/chess, to sign up to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in growing it. Shopify.com/chess.
This episode is brought to you by Disney's Mufasa, The Lion King. Get tickets now for the ultimate family holiday movie experience. Reunite with the characters you know and the untold story you'd never expect. Witness Mufasa's rise from orphan to king and see how the legendary villain Scar got his name. Disney's Mufasa, The Lion King. In theaters everywhere now. The kingdom awaits.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Perpetual Chess. We've got one more 2024 bonus pod for you because we have one more massive tournament coming your way starting December 26th in New York City. More on that in a second, but first, as always, wanted to thank our sponsors, chessable.com. They've got a massive sale going on. All of their courses are on sale, including mine, including all the Super GMs. So please be sure to go to their site and check out what they have to offer. If you've had something on your wish list, it is a good time to get it. Now, as for today's podcast, I've got two guests coming your way who will be participating in the FIDE World Rapid and Blitz. I'm excited to chat with them. And as always, the timestamps of when the guests appear are in the description. But I'm going to go over a few details of the tournament for those of you who may not be privy to them. So the FIDE World Rapid and Blitz this year is on Wall Street in New York City, which is just exciting just from a visibility perspective, but also I'm personally excited because I'm going to get to attend. This will actually be my first World Championship event to attend in person. The rounds are at 2 o'clock each day. The rapid portion, the rapid World Championship is 3 days. And then there's a rest day for the players where they're doing a big event called the Wall Street Gambit, where they have some prominent people from the finance world, and they have like Magnus and Fabiano playing all comers. You can buy tickets. They're expensive, but it should be a fun event, and I'm sure there'll be some online coverage as well. And then following Wall Street Gambit, there's the Blitz World Championship, which has a new format this year. So the Blitz World Championship this year will have one day where the final eight participants in both the open and the women's section are determined, and then a playoff the following day with a match format. So I'm excited for this change. I think it should be entertaining and excited for the whole tournament. As for who's playing, I think a lot of you may know this, but the top 20, everyone except for Anand and Gukesh is playing. Now, you may have heard Anand, of course, is semi-retired, and Gukesh wasn't sure after winning the world championship if he would take a break or not. He has decided to go in that direction. But Magnus is playing, Hikaru is playing, Faruja, Hans Niemann. Outside of the top 20, there's also Blitz Chess specialists, well-known from the online streets, like Daniel Naroditsky, who I recently interviewed, Grandmaster Bortnik, Andrew Tang. The list goes on. In the women's section, similarly strong. The only top players missing are Ho Yifan and Goryachkina, Alexandra Goryachkina. The reigning women's world champion, Zhu Wenjun, is playing. Tan Zhongyi, the Muzichuk sisters, Alexandra Kostyanyuk, and rising stars like Divya Deshmukh and Alice Lee. Of course, there's a strong American contingent in both the open and the women's section. So it should be very entertaining. It's always one of my favorite tournaments. A lot of people, of course, have some time off around the holidays, and it's nice to be able to turn on some fast-paced chess and watch chess history unfold. And joining me to discuss it are two wildcard participants. So the way the wildcards work is basically, as Eric Rosen say in my interview with him, there's a rating requirement to get in, but they also grant some special entries to some prominent people from the chess world. And my guests are both wildcard entries. Obviously, I love hearing from the top players as well, but to me, speaking with people like I am Eric Rosen and FM Alyssa Melikina, it's slightly more relatable to me to hear these people who are not practicing chess professionals in terms of playing to earn their livelihood, hearing what they do to throw their hats in the ring. And I think there's even some good advice for those of you who are playing your own tournaments every once in a while on breaks from your work schedule in terms of like how to approach this and how to get ready. So fun conversations with both players. We also talk about some other stuff with Eric. He's just back from Singapore. He was taking some amazing pictures and also doing some great events in Singapore. It sounded like just an awesome atmosphere at that world championship. And with FM Alyssa Melikina, she is the co-founder of the New York City Corporate Chess League, which actually there was an event at the venue that is going to be used for the World Rapid and Blitz. There was an event there a few months back where I saw this. I can verify it's a great space, a great place to hold a chess tournament. And that's about it for the preamble. The only other thing I'd say is I will be attending hopefully every day, hopefully all of the events, but I'm not yet sure how I'm going to cover it on the podcast. I will cover it in some form, but I'm not sure if I'm going to record interviews while I'm there or do daily retrospectives or whatever it might be. I'll get a better sense of that when I see how things are arranged. But I'm excited just as a fan. And of course, if you're going and you see me there, please do say hi. So without further ado, let's get you to the interviews. First up, a famed and beloved YouTuber, Twitch streamer, Stafford Gambit, theory developer, photographer. I am Eric Rosen rejoining the pod. Following him, we have corporate attorney and author and former youth champion Alyssa Melikina joining. So be sure to tune in to those interviews and I will get you to them now. And we are here with the chess and Twitch and photography star joining us fresh back from Singapore, where he was doing some community outreach as well as some photography. And now he gets a brief rest in St. Louis before he heads to New York for the FIDE World Rapid and Blitz. And I'm excited to catch up with I am Eric Rosen. Welcome back, Eric.
Thank you, Ben. Yeah, it's great to be back. I'm fighting a little bit of jet lag, but thrilled to be back on the podcast.
Yeah, it's been a while and excited to catch up and especially excited for this tournament, and particularly, Eric, no pressure, people like you playing in this tournament. Obviously, it's fun to see Magnus in action. Those of us here in the U.S. are excited to have him on our soil, and obviously all the other top players, Hikaru, Ali Reza, and the list goes on. But I like that they do these wild cards, and I like that you're one of them. What is the background? How did this come about?
Yeah, I like it too, especially because I'll be one of the lowest seeds, so there's like literally no pressure on me to perform at all. But yeah, I actually applied to be a wild card just through their website. I guess now it was a couple of months ago. And I had sent an email to, this was back in maybe late October, early November. And I kind of just waited to hear back. And eventually I got a message saying that they'd be happy to give me a wildcard spot if I promote the event beforehand, and also during the event too. So yeah, I'm super happy about it because I don't qualify to play based on rating. All my FIDE ratings are below 2,500, which is the main prerequisite to play in the event. But they do give, I think, a few dozen wildcards to lower-rated players. So I'm thrilled to be one of them.
Yeah, and I'm sure all of your big audience will be excited to watch you in action. And how are you planning to cover it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm mainly focused on trying to prepare to play decent chess.
Yeah,
Because I really didn't have much time over the last few weeks with just being at the World Championship match in Singapore, which I'm sure we'll talk about. But I got back home to St. Louis just a few days ago, and I basically have about 10 days to try and sharpen my chess and mentally prepare before the games actually begin. So I'll be doing a lot of training this coming week, and it'll be a mix of online and over the board training, which I'm hoping to film and make content around to kind of hype up the event. And then during the event, I think it's still kind of a question if I can get like footage from my games, because they have all these, I think, restrictions and protocols with media filming the games. But if I am, then it would be great to make YouTube content around that. But if not, then at the very least, hopefully I can recap my games for my YouTube channel.
Yeah, I mean, we'll find out. I mean, I'm certainly excited for whatever content you make around it. And you mentioned, so in terms of the prep, you mentioned you're going to turn it into some content. Like, what is a player at your level trying to get up to speed, not maybe in, you know, obviously actually playing chess isn't your full-time job. What do you do to prepare?
Yeah, just because I don't have much time leading up, a big part of it is just playing a lot of the schemes, sharpening my tactics and intuition, and then refining my opening repertoire. And for a tournament like this, where I don't have much time to prepare, if any time to prepare for each specific opponent, I'm going to try and make sure I have a more general repertoire to play that is both hopefully reputable, but also like tricky in nature, especially for Blitz and Rapid. Because I played a bunch of classical chess earlier this year, and usually you have several hours, if not like a whole night before, to prepare for opponents. But the nature of this event, with there only being maybe half hour between games, I'm going to have to just rely on what I know. And yeah, hopefully my openings can be in a decent enough shape to get like good positions from early on.
Are we going to see the Stafford Gambit, Eric? Let's cut to the chase.
I can't promise anything. I've been asked that a few times in person and on my streams. It's definitely a bucket list item, especially to like play the Stafford in a World Championship event.
Right.
But it would have to be against like the right opponent who I know wouldn't be prepared for it. And unfortunately, most of the strong players now know what the Stafford is and know how to easily refute it. So,
yeah, it's a tough one, especially because it's you. Like, I mean, if I'm like, I'm not particularly well prepared against the Stafford, but if I were playing you, I'd probably brush up on it.
Sure, sure. Yeah, I think the most notable game with a strong player, like a Grandmaster level game that featured the Stafford Gambit, was Dubov playing it against Hao Yifan. This was several years ago in some like big online event, and Hao Yifan didn't know what it was and actually declined it rather than accepting it. And then Dubov won a nice game. So I would have to play it against someone who, like, I know doesn't follow, like, chess on YouTube.
Right,
and, yeah. Yeah, maybe doesn't take things too seriously.
Only Ivanchuk.
Maybe Gelfand.
Yeah.
I did, like, the pairing simulation for, like, the Rapid and Blitz pairings to see who I might play first round. So if the current list stays the same, I am set to play Gelfand first round.
Oh, wow,
round
that would be amazing.
That would be cool. Yeah.
Yeah, speaking of legends. And Dubov, who's also, of course, in the tournament. Note to self, I guess, don't play the Stafford against him since you've seen him play it.
That's true, yeah. I actually had a dream the other day that I was playing Dubov first game. In my dream, I was late to the game and it was super stressful. So hopefully I'll show up on time.
And you mentioned that you don't feel like there's any expectations as one of the lower seeds. But to me, I mean, obviously you're way stronger than me, so this centers into it. But the specter of even being in the room with these players and, like, just not wanting to feel like I'm embarrassing myself would be daunting. Are you at all, like, feeling daunted going into this, or are you just excited?
Yeah, I've definitely felt this feeling of dauntingness in, like, previous events. But for this one, I'm just excited. Like, it's just a bucket list item. And the fact that I'm in the same section as, like, all these top super GMs, I think I'm just grateful to be part of it. And that really just takes the nerves away and takes the pressure off. And if I make ridiculous blunders that would embarrass myself, it's just Rapid and Blitz. So it's not like I'm pouring my heart and soul into a 5-hour chess game and losing. Like, if I make a mistake, the game ends and you play another game. So there are a lot of games to be played.
Yeah, you're also pretty good at Blitz, to be fair. So I think you'll be okay. What's your online chess.com rating hover around?
It's been fluctuating. I just played Title Tuesday. Like, it just finished about an hour ago. It's in the higher 2700s.
Yeah. So, I mean, so you should be fine. But I still, just the thought, like, it just brings out the anxiety in me, even though it's not necessarily rational, given all of your chess abilities. And do you consider yourself, Eric, a stronger Blitz player than Rapid player?
Oh, that's a good question. I definitely consider myself stronger in Rapid and Blitz compared to Classical, because I think openings have a much stronger sway in Rapid and Blitz. Like, if you get a good position from the opening, or if you know the opening well, then you save time. And that's just a much bigger factor when the time control is shorter. But comparing Rapid and Blitz, I think personally I prefer Blitz more, because with Rapid, it's a bit trickier with time management. Like, you have enough time to take a few minutes on the critical moments.
Right.
And Blitz, you just kind of rely on intuition. And I think it's a bit more straightforward with time management. So I'm definitely going to be training in both time controls with the 3+2 and the 15+10. But yeah, I'm definitely more comfortable with 3+2.
Yeah, I mean, you've got so many reps in. Many of us do with Blitz, but Rapid, if you're not like someone who played on the Champions Chess Tour online or something, you know, then you might not necessarily have as much experience. And I also, like, not having played it a ton, but just intuitively, like you say, the pacing takes more getting used to than Blitz, where you know you just have to move. And obviously, as we've mentioned, so many luminaries in this tournament. I suspect I know the answer to this, but if there's one person you could play, like, out of all of them, who would it be?
Yeah, I have the entry list in front of me now. I mean, obviously, like, Magnus, Fabiano, Nepo, Aronian, Frusian, Hikaru. I mean, the list goes on and on. I think if I play, like, any super GM, I'll be happy. But yeah, it's... I mean, you scroll down and there's GMs well into, like, the top 150 players in the tournament.
Yeah.
So, it's, I don't think it's likely I'll play, like, the top players unless I start well and then the pairing gods are maybe kinder to me. But,
at least your first two, right? Something like maybe.
Yeah. Or
three.
There's a case where, like, I win my first game and then one of the top players draws her first game.
Right.
And then I'm the lowest player with 1 point, and I play the highest player with half a point. So that's my best hope of probably playing Magnus.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, that would be incredible to see, and obviously some good content. And I'm sure he wants revenge for you accidentally beating him in Bullet all those years ago.
He's gotten revenge a good handful of times in our online games, and also once in the Sinkfield Cup opening ceremony simul. So, but maybe okay. More revenge for him is always welcome.
I'm sure. Yeah, I'm sure he keeps a list of everyone who manages to a mental list of mm-hmm. everyone who manages to beat him. So again, returning to the training games that you have set up, obviously there's a couple St. Louis residents also playing. Are you able to divulge who you'll be doing OTB training with for the Rapid and Blitz?
Yeah. There's a huge community of like very strong title players in St. Louis, which I'm grateful to be a part of. I actually attended chess training at Webster University with their team just yesterday.
Oh, right. I wasn't even thinking about the universities. Go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, Webster and St. Louis University are doing training all this week, not only preparing for World Rapid Blitz, but also preparing for the Pan Ams, which is right after the World Rapid Blitz. So I attended yesterday, and it was 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. A lot of different forms of training between solving exercises, doing opening prep, playing a lot of Blitz games against players. So I'm hoping to attend a few more of those sessions. And it's a strong group of players. I mean, Laquan Liam is the coach, who's a former World Rapid champion, and then a handful of GMs and other title players.
And Laquan Liam is playing as well, right?
He is, yes.
Yeah, and way back in one of our earlier interviews, you told some fun stories about mm-hmm. trying to tangle with him, who's been comfortably one of the top 20, 25 players in the world, and no slouch at Blitz either. And so in terms of your openings, are you going to be able to make content for your channels that doesn't reveal what openings you play?
That's hard to do.
Are you worried about that?
I'm not too worried, because as one of the lower seeds, like, players won't be, I don't think they'll be preparing specifically for me.
Right.
And I still have like a broad enough repertoire to kind of be a moving target in the opening. And it's kind of the nature as a streamer too. Like I stream all my Title Tuesday games, and I'm playing like decently serious openings in Title Tuesday. So, like for me, it's just good practice to play openings, review the games, and with any games I play online, I do make an effort to go back, look at the improvements. So I would hope that they're more useful for myself rather than for any potential future opponents.
Yeah, that makes sense. And especially given what you mentioned about, like, it's not like people have hours to prepare, like to go through your content before the pairings come. Like once the pairings come, it's right. just sit down and play. And of course, so I asked you if there's anyone you're super excited to play. Is there anyone that you would not want to play?
Ooh, scrolling through the list. I'm hoping I don't get like stuck at the bottom of the pairings where I'm just like playing lower to players. Because the main excitement for playing this event is playing like the strong GMs. But there are, just looking at the rapid rating list, I'm seeded 163 out of 187.
Okay.
So I think my goal is to play higher rated players every single game and avoid being pared down.
Sounds good. And what's going on with your classical game, Eric? You mentioned you played a bunch over the summer, which I followed here and there. Do you have any other classical ambitions currently?
Yeah, so I played three classical events over the summer between Madrid, Biel, and a tournament in Norway. And honestly, like after my most recent classical tournament in Norway, this was back in August, I felt pretty burnt out, especially from just the long classical games. And I enjoyed playing the classical chess. I think it forced me to work a lot of my game, learn a lot of like different openings, work on areas of my game beyond the opening, time management and positional understanding. But I kind of made the conscious decision after August to take somewhat of a break from classical chess and focus more on rapid blitz, especially with this tournament coming up. So I imagine I'll probably find a few events to play in 2025, classical events, but I'm trying to be more selective with the classical tournaments I do play, and also be a bit more self-aware to just make sure I'm not burning out after a classical tournament.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, it's always fun to see you in action when circumstances permit. And last question on the World Rapid and Blitz. You may have already answered this when you discussed mainly wanting to avoid being sort of at the bottom, but both in the Rapid and in the Blitz, like, what would you consider a success for the tournament?
That's a good question. And it's not something I've thought too much about. I think it's less so about my final score or rating performance and more about the overall quality and interest of my games.
Such a purist.
So
admirable.
I think that's like the healthier mindset to go into.
But that doesn't mean that most of us have that mindset.
It is sometimes tricky to kind of balance this mindset with being focused on winning and gaining rating. But yeah, I just want to like enjoy myself, enjoy the games, hopefully be prepared as possible or as prepared as possible. And yeah, even if I don't get to play any Stafford Gambits, I have a lot of unused opening preparation that I did for all these classical tournaments.
Oh, wow.
When I play these classical tournaments, I prepare several hours for a single opponent, and then they deviate on move one or move two. And I have all these opening files saved up that have a lot of like interesting lines and novelties and new ideas that hopefully I can show some of in the Rapid and Blitz.
Okay, sounds exciting. All right, well, Eric, really excited for that tournament. But let's, before we let you go, hear a bit about your trip to Singapore. So what was your, I saw your credit on some beautiful photos, but I know you had other responsibilities there too. What was like your job title for this trip?
Yeah, that's kind of hard to nail down like one job title, because I had maybe a dozen different responsibilities. I was mainly invited as a special guest on behalf of the Singaporean Chess Federation. And I did a lot of different things in the fan zone, also appeared on the commentary stream as a guest with Jovanka and David Howell. But the fan zone events range from Q&A with fans, blindfold and blitz challenges.
Oh, wow.
There was a trivia night, which I hosted with Emil Satovsky.
He knows his chess.
He does, yeah.
Yeah, he knows his chess history.
I prepared like a whole slideshow of trivia questions, which were some of which were chess history, but some of which were more like modern kind of fun facts. So I tried to stump him on a few.
Do you remember anything off the top of your head?
I have the slideshow. I just have the tab open. The first question was, which world champion made a guest appearance on The Simpsons?
That would be Magnus, right?
That is, yeah. Okay, Neil wasn't sure, but he guessed Magnus. Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Magnus did the voice dubbing for one episode. There's some other questions too, like what was the most recent checkmate over the board in a world championship match?
Huh. Was that the tie break of Magnus Nepo? The rook takes h6.
Magnus Karjakin is queen h6. It's a good guess, but Karjakin resigned one move before mate.
Okay.
It was an Alekhine game from 1929, I think. And Emil like kind of guessed the player, but he couldn't remember the date.
Okay.
But yeah, I prepared a bunch of fun questions, and every day there were a few hundred fans like cycling through the fan zone. I think they had a max capacity of like 400 fans that could get access per round. So it was just an incredible atmosphere of chess fans. And there were a lot of times where people would approach me for selfies and autographs, and then a line would form, and I'd kind of be stuck for over an hour just chatting with people and taking photos. So yeah, it was a super cool event to be a part of.
That's amazing. What was the highlight of the whole trip for you?
Oh, it's really hard to nail down one highlight. But the last couple of days of the event, I was asked to fill in as one of the official photographers for game 13. One of the main photographers couldn't make it, so I filled in, and I was one of the only people who had access in the fish tank for the whole round. It was like the players, the arbiters, and myself, along with Maria, photo chess. And it was super cool just to be in the room, photographing Gukesh and Ding. And then, of course, the final day too, with Gukesh winning the title and capturing all these moments with him celebrating and fans around, and him hugging his whole team, his dad, his seconds, and it was super cool. And then the day after he won, there was actually a whole photo shoot with him and his family in some nice skywalk area overlooking Singapore. So I was fortunate enough to take some photos there too. So it was, that was probably one of the main highlights.
Yeah, sounds like an unforgettable trip. And for listeners not familiar, Eric has extensive experience both as a photographer and doing some video editing, et cetera, which, fits well for his day job. But my question, Eric, is had you brought your photo equipment? Did you know that this might be possible?
I did, but I wasn't expecting to photograph in any official capacity, but I did come prepared with my camera and my telephoto zoom lens. So it was good enough equipment to capture good quality photos.
Excellent. Super exciting. So would you say, I guess it's hard to know going in, but a month ago, were you more excited for Singapore or the World Rapid and Blitz, or whenever you found out that you had been granted a wild card spot?
Oh, that's a good question. I'm excited for both. They're very different types of events, because one event I'm doing all these different sort of chess jobs, but not playing chess. And in just over a week, I'm going to be playing chess against the highest level players in the world. So I think it's going to be tricky to adjust, but I enjoy both things. It's hard to pick one over the other, but I think in terms of just a life bucket list item, playing in the World Rapid Blitz is one of the things I'm most excited for.
Yeah. And like I said, it adds a lot. Just as a fan, I feel this way, and I'm sure many others do, to have someone like you playing in it. Obviously there's also people like Danya, who has a big online following, but of course Blitz Monster, I'm super excited to see you in action. All right, last thing, Eric, before we say goodbye. So thank you for putting me in touch with Superja for the recent Adult Improver interview. That was a fantastic story. She mentioned you were going to be doing a lesson with her. I'm guessing, given what's been going on in your life, that hasn't happened yet?
It has not. No, I listened to the interview. It was great, great interview, by the way. Life has just been so hectic these last few weeks, and then coming up too. But once the World Rapid and Blitz finishes, we'll be able to have a lesson.
Nice. Does your schedule slow down a bit in the new year?
Once 2025 begins, I'll have a little bit more free time.
Excellent. Well, like we've said, I know you've been super busy, so I appreciate you taking the time, Eric, and looking forward to seeing you and rooting you on in New York.
Thanks so much, man. Yeah, I appreciate it. Looking forward to seeing you too.
Coming up next, we will talk more FIDE World Rapid and Blitz with FM Alyssa Melikina after the break.
The Yeti store has so many great gifts, we had to hire a cattle auctioneer to make the most of these next 30 seconds.
All right, folks, let's get started with the Yeti French Press. Enjoy coffee that stays hot for hours in the French Press. 34-ounce for you, 6'4 for the crews. The Yeti French Press. Next, waterproof bags. Bags waterproof. Submersible waterproof doubles. Waterproof bags. Pours mostly water, so you get a waterproof Yeti bag. Do I smell something cooking? Oh, new cast iron skillets made to be passed down like mama's recipes. Take a steak, cornbread, cobbler's pot pie, and potatoes to next level with three sizes of Yeti cast iron skillets.
Gear, gifts, and product experts. Visit the Yeti store at Santana Row today.
This episode is brought to you by LifeLock. The holidays mean more travel, more shopping, more time online, and more personal info in places that could expose you to identity theft. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second. If your identity is stolen, their U.S.-based restoration specialist will fix it, guaranteed or your money back. Get more holiday fun and less holiday worry with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/podcast. Terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by AWS. Amazon Q Business is the new generative AI assistant from AWS. Many tasks can make business slow, like wading through mud.
Help!
Luckily, there's a faster, easier, less messy choice. Amazon Q can securely understand your business data to help you streamline tasks, like summarizing quarterly results or doing complex analyses in no time. Q got this. Learn what Amazon Q Business can do for you at aws.com/learnmore.
And we are here with a return guest from many years ago. She was a Scholastic champion growing up, like me, a native of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. She placed third in the 2009 U.S. Women's Championship. These days, she is primarily a litigation partner at a large New York City law firm, but she manages to stay active in the chess world. In fact, she helps organize the Corporate Chess League in New York City. She's also an author. She wrote the book Reality Check: What the Ancient Game of Chess Can Teach You About Success in Modern Competitive Settings. You can hear our guest and I discuss that in our 2017 interview. But without further ado, I'm excited to welcome back to the program FM Alyssa Melikina.
Hi, Ben. So glad to be back here after so long. You said last time I was here was 2017 to talk about my book. It's crazy to think that that's been almost 10 years now.
I know, right? How where does the time go? It's crazy. And it never, I mean, it hits home for me when I think about my kids, of course, and interviewing certain guests like yourself that I'm like, how was it that long ago? It makes no sense. But it's good to catch up, as you said. And Alyssa, so obviously you're a busy woman with a lot of responsibility in a professional setting. What made you decide to, I assume you applied to play in this tournament, and what drove that decision, if I am correct in that assumption?
Sure, I threw my hat into the ring as a wild card for the FIDE World Rapid and Blitz. And I haven't played at a world championship level, I believe, since 2016 at the World Team Championships in China. That might have been the last time I played on the world stage. But like we just talked about, everything is a blur, especially since the pandemic. So what drew me to this, of course, is that it's in New York City. So pretty close to home for me. My practice is based in New York. I live in Philadelphia right now. This is the first time this tournament is coming to New York City. They hosted a smaller version, the World Corporate Team Championships in New York City in June, and I attended that, and some of our member teams for the New York City Corporate Chess League were playing in that. So I got a preview of what the setup would look like on Wall Street, you know, how FIDE goes about organizing it. So when they announced that this was coming to New York City, it seemed like too good of an opportunity to pass up.
Yeah, I, of course, saw you at that event, which you had a hand in helping ensure happened. And since we were both there, you could potentially, so for listeners not familiar, the event will be held in a historic building that's been functioning as kind of like a banquet hall called Cipriani's on Wall Street. But then the women's event will be across the street. I have not seen the venue that the women's event is in. I don't know if you have, Alyssa, but could you describe Cipriani's for our listeners?
Sure, and I haven't had a chance to see the different women's event or playing hall yet, but I do remember from the main event at Cipriani's, I mean, it is stunning when you walk in. It has that historic New York City charm that you can expect from Wall Street. It's definitely different from your typical run-of-the-mill tournament. So I think if you have a chance to stop by and see it in person, you'll be in for a treat.
Yeah, beautiful, beautiful building, big sort of open space. And yeah, definitely excited to see an event hosted there. And I'm curious, I asked Eric this as well, because Eric obviously is a professional chess content creator and a very strong player, but not a professional player, and you even more so. I know you've played a few tournaments recently, but you've got a lot of work responsibility. Was there any apprehension on the chess side about applying to taking on some of the best players in the world?
Yes, there still is apprehension, especially since I will say that Rapid and Blitz is not my strength. I grew up playing classical chess back in the day, so I never expected that I would compete on the world level at these time controls. So that is something that I'll have to get used to. And then on top of that, I'm going to see all of my old contenders and rivals, if you will. But on the U.S. side, just excited to see my friends and all of the girls that I grew up playing with on the world level. So it will be a reunion of sorts. But to your question, yes, the nerves are still there, but it's something more that I have to work on leading up.
Yeah, on the U.S. side, we've got, of course, many of the top women players, from Irina Krush to Carissa Yip to Jennifer Yu to Tatya Vabrahamian, all registered. And then, of course, on the world stage, you've got the big three from China, Lei Tingzhe, Tan Zhongyi, Zhu Wenjun, Ko Xinyuk. The list goes on. I mean, it's intimidating just to read it, which leads to the question, are you going to get to do any prep? You were just saying it's a busy time of year for your work.
It is, and it's also not the best timing with the holidays coming up, right, intervening. So I'm going to have to make some sacrifices around the holidays and try to cram in some prep and training. But for me, it'll be more psychological at this point. I'm just hoping to get some good games in the rapid section. I believe I'm playing 11 rounds or so. So I just want to get some good games in, maybe get some upsets and just put my best foot forward. I'm not coming in with any major grand aspirations.
That's good. And I know you've played in many world events when you were playing a lot more actively. Have you ever played in the World Rapid and Blitz?
No, and the reason I haven't is because I believe it's always held in Europe or Asia or some remote location, which would be prohibitive for me to travel just based on timing reasons. So yeah, the fact that it's in New York City opens up that possibility, and I hope that they'll continue it.
Yeah, it's awesome to see it. I mean, I'd sign on for anywhere in North America, but like you, being based not too far from New York City. And Alyssa, correct me if I'm wrong, but you decided not to play the Blitz event, just the Rapid. Is that right?
That's right. I'm only playing the Rapid for the first half of the tournament. This goes back to what I said, that I get really rusty with fast time controls. So for me, the Blitz time control with 3 minute and 2 second increment, I didn't want my first foray into that being on the world stage. I thought the Rapid is something that would be more manageable for me. And then if I'm not playing the Blitz, it will give me an opportunity to check out the games in action and see what the open section is up to. So I feel like I'll still get the taste of playing on the world stage and getting that experience without subjecting myself to the stress of playing the Blitz.
Yeah, I think I shouldn't be playing, but if I were, I might take a similar approach. Similar to you, I'm classically trained, you could say, meaning I move slow. So
yeah. So, and we're kind of in the same realm, I think, where we are with our chess career and the chess progress. But interestingly, most of the people I talk to would take the opposite approach. They would rather play in the Blitz and not in the Rapid. And one of the rationales is if you play in the Blitz, there's a greater chance for variance. And with variance, anything can happen. So if I'm the underdog, theoretically, in the Blitz, you know, I could make more things happen. So that was one approach that I considered, but I figured, you know, I don't want to play chess just to leave things up to chance. That's not why I started with the game. So I felt like the Rapid would be a better fit.
Yeah, I think also some of it might come down to opening prep. Like when I chatted with Eric, which listeners will have already heard, he's obviously always cooking up stuff in the lab for his openings. You know, he's making videos about it. He mentioned he played some classical tournaments where he got some prep that he hadn't had a chance to use. And obviously, if you can spring a surprise and you know your theory inside and out, the less time your opponent has, the better. Whereas if you're coming at it from a less professional perspective, like you are and like I would be, I think that's to our detriment. We're going to be the surprisee rather than the surpriser.
Right. And I think with faster time controls, there's more flexibility with the types of openings you could play. And I think that would favor me as someone who is not studying openings consistently and memorizing all the lines. You know, if I can play some side lines or some challenging lines or provocative lines that my opponents might not have time to prepare for in advance or figure out over the board, that is a good opportunity to use it. Whereas, you know, I'm hesitant about playing in classical round robins these days for that reason, because yeah, I'm not sure if I would be able to keep up with the prep.
Yeah, for sure. It's daunting these days. And if you cannot answer if you want, I don't think that many of your competitors are going to be listening to this. And even if they do, they might not end up playing you. But are you going to rely on your primary repertoire, or are you going to try to prepare a few new things with your limited time?
Yeah, and I agree. I don't think anyone is going to listen to, you know, this podcast and prepare specifically for me. And if they were, I would be totally flattered if they did that. So yeah, I'm not going to prepare anything new specifically for this tournament, just because I don't think this is the time or the place to do that. I think when you're playing in these quick time controls in this environment, you need to come in with confidence, because you don't have the luxury of taking time on the clock. and thinking through the moves and trying to figure out positions from scratch, you need to make quick decisions in the moment. So it's just better to be comfortable with the repertoire, even if narrower. And even if it doesn't give you that edge necessarily, I would take the comfort over going through lines deeper and getting that edge, which is, of course, completely the opposite approach of what the top players would take playing in a classical event.
Yeah, that makes sense. And so you rely on your repertoire. You will brush up on some lines. Are you going to get in any sort of calculation training or training games, do you think?
So, yeah, I'm glad you brought up the training games. I am trying to do some friendly sparring matches, and I know that I need to play more online chess and blitz chess, and it's just something that unless I have it scheduled or unless I'm accountable to some other person to show up and play the games, I just don't get motivated to do it during the week.
Yeah.
I know in the back of my mind I should be doing it more regularly. So the good thing about having this event come up is that it motivates me and it creates an anchor and a deadline by which I have to do these things. So there will be training games, there will be sparring games. It's great that this can be conducted online, so I don't have to travel for a tournament to do that. I have played in person at some of the weekend continental chess events, more so just to get into the mindset of a chess tournament. You know, there are a lot of events that happen in Philly, so pretty easy and local for me. Those did not go too well.
Right.
If I'm being candid. So a lot of things to work on there, but I think it's just about preparing that mindset.
Yeah, I mean, there is a lot to be said, you know, bad, disappointing results notwithstanding. There's a lot to be said for just it being a bit in your muscle memory. That can often be the biggest adjustment. You know, I always say, like, people, when they try to get back into it, you know, they'll take, and I'm in this boat now, like, I'm finally going to get back to playing in February after some months off, but it's like, you just feel like you're getting warmed up by the time you've played like three tournaments. And then you're like, well, do I want to continue after I got my skull kicked in? You know, or even if you do well, I mean, just to maintain the momentum takes work.
Momentum is so important. I think that's really underestimated in chess. And then for people like us who take breaks between playing, we lose a lot of that momentum.
Yep.
Even if we have a good tournament, we'll take a break and then we're starting from scratch again.
Yeah. It goes back, I always think that language, learning a foreign language, is one of the best corollaries for chess, and it's the same thing. You know, if you're in a country, you studied some language a long time ago, it starts to come back to you. And when you're there for about 10 days, you start to feel like, oh, you know, maybe I can actually, like, you know, order a meal at a restaurant or whatever your level is. But then you have to start over, and it's definitely, chess is absolutely the same way.
Yeah, and it's also about shifting your expectations, because when I played on the world level in the past, you know, I was representing the U.S. team and I was coming in from a hot streak from the U.S. championships or other tournaments, was at my peak, really had the momentum behind me. And so I have to readjust and consider, if I'm playing at the world stage, it's more to overcome a challenge. And I think that this is a new terrain for me, because having the master title and having all of these accomplishments, I don't really think of myself playing in tournaments as a challenge, because there is that expectation of I have mastered the game, so I'm trying to aim for perfection. But I think when I'm coming in from this mindset, it's just a healthier approach. And yeah, it will require a shift for sure. So, you know, I have to think about why am I playing and how can I get independent enjoyment from the game without results, and not tie my fulfillment from the tournament to the results, because those may or may not come.
Yeah, that's always a goal. But I would say for you, given your life circumstances and the strength of your opponents for this event, more than ever, it makes sense. And I'm going to ask you a question I also asked Eric, which is, with all of these stars coming to this tournament, is there anyone you would be particularly excited or fearful of playing?
Well, in the women's section, I mean, I will say, like, if I play some of the, you know, the contenders on the U.S. side that I've played in a while, I think that would be interesting. It would be nostalgic in a bit. So I'm not saying I'm looking forward to playing them, but I do feel like, you know, if I did, that would be an experience to have come full circle.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I'm sure you guys have a lot of shared history. And no one, I'm guessing, you're especially fearful of playing, being that you're trying to, it sounds like, take a sort of carefree and not intense approach to it.
Well, I wouldn't say carefree.
Okay.
I wouldn't. Yeah, that's not a word that I would use with my approach, but I'm trying to come to it from a more, you know, open-minded and Zen perspective,
You
will.
Better said than I did.
Yeah, there are only so many things that I can control. I wouldn't get fearful of anyone in particular, but I would not be pleased, of course, if I lose all of my games. So, you know, that would be an unpleasant situation. So it's more about, you know, can I take it one game at a time and try to play games that I would be proud of at the end of the day? Because, you know, if it comes back to New York, hopefully I can play again. But you never know. This could be, you know, my one shot to play at this level.
Yeah, and it is so hard. You know, hopefully you do fine. You know, you're in like the lower third, but you're not at the very bottom of the pairings. There's no reason to fear a disastrous result. But when, having had my share of disastrous results, there is that feeling that things are snowballing, and we all want to avoid that. That's no fun.
Exactly. You have to stop the bleeding.
Exactly.
Russian thing.
Yeah. Or when you find yourself in a hole, stop digging, as the saying goes. And last thing I wanted to talk about, Alyssa, so we mentioned that you're helping, despite your busy life, you're helping to organize this corporate chess league. So on the podcast, I'm always stumping for leagues. It's one thing I'm jealous of that are so commonplace in Europe. I feel like that's one thing that's often missing in chess, is that sense of community and team and the social element. And in New York, things are thriving. I mean, obviously chess is quite popular to begin with in New York, both due to its history and due to the many scholastic programs, and a lot of chess players seem to end up living there. But this corporate chess league, I think, is a great addition. Could you tell our listeners a bit about it?
Sure, and I appreciate you highlighting it. So this is one of the avenues in which I can combine my day job with my chess background and keep the two communities intersected. So this started a couple years ago before the pandemic, co-founded it with two other female chess players, Yan Ling Yan and Alexandra Turim, who is still my partner and co-organizes and co-commissions the chess league with me. So it just came up as an idea because we were at our respective corporate firms and we knew people there who liked chess, but there wasn't really a forum to come together and play. Even just informally, casually, no stakes on the line, unrated games, which is actually the preference for a lot of our teams and members. And like you mentioned, it's the community aspect that's the driving force. So we started out with a couple of starting teams at the time. My friend Alex, she was the captain at Goldman Sachs. So that was one of our beginning teams. And then we had teams from all the major New York City financial firms and banks. So JPMC, Blackstone, BlackRock. We got Google on board. Just a host of other teams and banks and tech firms. And before the pandemic, we would play regularly over the span of a couple of weeks in person. Again, just had, you know, a nice corporate venue and conference room to play, not rated, nothing really formal. We would just run it all on our own and got some sponsorship from my law firm at the time. So these became very popular, very well attended. We actually had more spectators than players sign up, which I thought was interesting because most people, they just want to come out, watch the games, you know, socialize, get a drink, get some hors d'oeuvres, you know, chat and catch up and have that forum. And then after the pandemic, we've been experimenting with the different types of formats and getting people together, but our listserv has grown, our member teams have grown. The last time we ran this, we had around 20 teams, reached a lot more banks and tech firms, keep expanding. And in fact, during the FIDE World Rapid and Blitz, we're having just a casual tournament, more like a holiday party, but a Blitz and brunch in advance of the Wall Street Gambit Conference.
Oh, cool.
Which also has the corporate angle there. So I'm glad FIDE is pursuing that. So that's another way just to draw our members out, spotlight that this is happening in New York City, and, you know, make sure that the communities come together.
Yeah. So for listeners not familiar, the Wall Street Gambit is on the day in between the World Rapid and Blitz, and the Rapid and the Blitz. There's a conference where Vishy Anand, Magnus Carlsen, Boaz Weinstein, who's a master level player and very successful financer, are speaking, and one or two other people are going to do a sort of roundtable. And at the corporate event that you and I attended in June, they did something similar with Hikaru there. And I definitely think what you've helped to spearhead in New York. Obviously, New York has that critical mass that's hard to duplicate everywhere, but I think there's plenty of room for growth in terms of corporate outreach. And yeah, just the atmosphere you describe of like even people not playing, wanting to be a part of it is inspiring. So I'm glad that you undertook it.
Yeah, and we're going to keep it up. I mean, the interest is greater than ever for chess. And since the pandemic, and of course, having these events come to New York just builds up that interest. But in terms of preparing for the tournament, it is something else that I have to worry about, if you will, because not only am I playing in the tournament, but I'm also organizing. And even though it's a casual tournament, you know, it's just a friendly competition to mark the end of the holidays, it is still something that we have to organize. And we are a volunteer-run organization. We handle all of the chess setup ourselves. You know, we set all the clocks. My current law firm is graciously sponsoring the get-together that we're having this time. But we don't charge any types of membership fees or entry fees. So it's really just a place for people to get together. And then, yeah, after we finish recording, I'm going to have to go and figure out some logistics about preparing for the event, which is happening already next weekend, which I can't even believe.
Just hearing you say it, I better let you go. So I really appreciate your taking the time, and it's awesome that you're taking this opportunity and playing in the tournament. And again, all the work you're doing to help build the chess community in New York.
Yeah, absolutely. Good to be back. And Ben, I'm sure I'll see you in New York in a few weeks. Sounds like you'll be there, right?
Yep, I will be there. See you soon enough, and good luck in the tournament.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
The perfect holiday party has three things: good people, throwback holiday R&B, and a bottle of Milagro Tequila. Smooth, bright, and 100% blue agave Milagro Tequila is inspired by the vibrant creativity of modern Mexico City. Available in silver, añejo, and my favorite, reposado, Milagro goes easy on ice or your favorite holiday cocktail. And this holiday season, make sure you try out Milagro's new Cristalino Añejo, the perfect gift to impress your people. Whether you're hosting or pulling up, get Milagro in the mix and make this holiday season one to remember.
Drink Milagro responsibly. 40% alcohol by volume. William Grant & Sons, Inc., New York.